Remember, in Revelation chapter 12, we have a very interesting chapter. John uses a woman, and he uses this image in two different ways. First of all, he pictures this woman as involving all the things that were necessary to bring Jesus into the world. And then this woman, if you will, gives birth. Christ comes into the world. And then in the latter part of the chapter, this woman takes on the meaning of the New Testament church. Satan, of course, was not very happy about that. As you look through the Old Testament, the devil tried a lot of different things to undo God's plan. You've got him active in the Garden of Eden, and he did all kinds of things with the nation of Israel. But finally, the Lord is able to come, and now that Christianity has been instituted, the devil is not happy. And that kind of brings us up to about where we left off. Let's pick up. This is kind of it's set an offset type in the ASV and maybe your translation as well. We went through verse 10, but let's, because that's kind of part of the thought, read from 10 down through 12. And I heard a great voice in heaven saying, "Now has come the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Christ. For the accuser of our brother is cast down. He accuses them before God day and night." And remember we said that in going through this material, Satan was cast down in this chapter, not as I suggested at the beginning, because of sin, not that John's talking about him being thrown out of heaven, but he was cast down in the sense that Jesus overcame him at the cross. And then 11 and 12, "And they overcame him because," here's the reason, "they overcame him because of the blood of the Lamb and because of the word of the testimony, and they loved not their life even unto death. Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and ye that dwell in them. Woe for the earth and for the sea, because the devil is gone down unto you, having great wrath, knowing that he hath but a short time." When we think about the number of people who have become Christians, we have literally tens of thousands, maybe millions of people who have taken advantage of Christ's blood. They have been freed from their sins because of the gospel. We know that we are baptized into the benefits of Jesus' death. Romans 6, verse 4 is one of the places where this particular point is taught. And then as we continue to walk in the light, remember 1 John 1, 7, we walk in the light, and then the blood of who? Christ, or Jesus, does what? It continues to cleanse us from all sins. So John recognizes this fact in not only Revelation 12, but also in 1 John 1. Now we talked about last week the fact that Satan, especially before the cross, liked to accuse people. We went back to the book of Zechariah. We looked at some other passages. But now, the devil, if he wants to accuse people of sin, what can anybody say to him that's on the side of right? Joe sinned. Well, did Joe sin? Sure he did. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But what's the follow-up point? Yes, he sinned, but we also have the forgiveness through the blood of Christ. Revelation 12, 1 John chapter 1, verse 7. So the idea that Satan is now able to accuse people successfully, that power has been taken away. Now, you may remember, too, from what we said is the devil now powerless. No. He is still a dangerous creature, but God has restricted, especially for Christians, much of what he is able to do. Now, one of the qualities associated with serving God and being faithful to him is faithfulness even to the point of death. And this is what you see at the end of verse 11. There John says, "They overcame him by the blood of the Lamb," or the blood of Christ, "because of the word of the testimony, and they loved not their life," what's he say? Unto death. Doesn't that sound like some of the points that Jesus made during his earthly life? The Lord said, "He that loves his life is going to lose it. But if you're willing to do what with your life for my sake, if you're willing to give it up, then you're going to actually, in eternity, you're going to, all right, you're going to have life. You're going to save it. You're going to preserve it." So this is John's point. We overcome. Or in this case, these people overcame. They were willing to surrender their lives, and they were willing to die. And that was, of course, the path to victory. Now, does John say that these people love being martyred? No. He doesn't make that point. And that surely was not pleasant. You think about some of the people that were killed in some brutal ways. There were some people who were crucified. There were some people who were set on fire. You have some people being drowned to death. So all of those experiences, I mean, there surely was some fright there. But still, these people, regardless of what society, and in this case Rome, wanted to do to them, these people loved Christ, they loved his word, they were committed to him. So regardless of what the state wanted to do or did do to them, they were willing to endure it. Their testimony that John talks about may either refer to a Christian's confession or one of the possibility, their conviction about Jesus being the Son of God. Now, in the midst of this, as we look at verse 12, we find some rejoicing. And I think the rejoicing probably is on at least two counts. When you have Satan, Jesus has conquered him at the cross, and he has been stripped of much of his power. You think there was any rejoicing in heaven over that by the good angels? I would be inclined to think so. I mean, it looks like, at least for the while, maybe the devil has been winning. He's doing very well, so righteous angels probably rejoiced at Satan's overthrow. But here, I don't think the emphasis is on the angels. Therefore, rejoice, O heavens, and ye that dwell in them. You may remember, we've talked about this before, especially from Ephesians. Ephesians 2, verses 5 and 6 would be one passage where Paul says Christians sit with Christ. You remember where? In the heavens or in the heavenly places. Well, we're not obviously this morning sitting here in the heavenly places. I mean, we're here in northern Indiana with snow and some cold weather. So what's he mean when he says sitting with Christ in the heavenly places? All right, spiritually we are. We think about it, for example, from the standpoint of the president. We're not the president, but if we were appointed to the president's cabinet, would we not share in his reign or rule, his authority? Sure. So if we're members of Christ's church, we're members, if you will, of his cabinet. So we share in that position, in that role, and that's how I understand this point. You know, we dwell there. And in contrast to that, he says, woe for the earth and for the sea. You think John was literally talking about, you know, the earth and the sea? I don't think so. You have here a contrast. If we have the heavenlies referring to the folks who have the relationship with Christ, then those on the earth and the sea would probably refer to? All right. And they'd be saved or unsaved? They would be the unsaved. So, once again, for the unrighteous people, not good news that the devil is around and lurking and wanting to do all the damage that he can to them. But for the Christians, even though the devil is still in the world, still active, God's people have a great reason to be happy. Now, this also, I think, is a passage which sheds some light on what Paul said in Philippians 4, verse 4. Remember what he said? What in the Lord? And again, I will say what? Rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I will say rejoice. Well, how could you say that, Paul? Well, if he were looking at things through the eyes of Revelation 12, what would he say? You can rejoice because the accuser, the devil, the one who wants to destroy you has been brought down. Now, he's not completely out of commission, but a lot of his power has been stripped away. So when we think about the blessings that Christians have, this is one of the great things that we possess. Anything that you want to add or ask before we make a couple more points? Betty? If you're looking at it from the standpoint of a threat, yes. There's no doubt about that, because Satan, still, as long as we are in this life, we're subject to falling. And the Bible does tell us that he's a tempter.
Well, the woe is kind of a, you know, listen up, you can still fall, just like, and be with the unsaved, because he is in the world, and he is hunting everyone.
Sure. And that's why you have those kinds of warnings back there in Revelation 2:10. Be thou faithful even to the point of death. There is that warning there. That there may be something, in this case, Satan may use a temptation or something else to try to turn or steer you from that particular path. So you're right. There is that need for people to hear that warning. Was there another hand over there? Looked like somebody was starting to flash one. Okay, a couple of the quick points, and then we'll pick up with what we have in verse 13. Satan, as he's still active on the earth, you have to bear in mind what we've already said about Revelation chapter 12. All the things that God used in the Old Testament to bring bring Jesus into the world, devil was successful or not successful? He failed. All right, and now as he continues to work, he has to work with a less amount of authority. He can no longer possess people. Now, if you were in that set of circumstances, you tried, you worked, You spent your best efforts to undo God's plan and you failed. And now for the rest of time, as you work on the earth, your efforts are undercut because your power has been substantially reduced. How are you going to feel? Good or bad?
Angry.
You're going to be angry. Well, guess what we find in Revelation chapter 12 about Satan? All right, he's angry. He's got great, great anger. Now, we touched on this in one of our earlier classes, but he is very, very upset. And one of the reasons, in addition to what I said, would be that he knows that his time to inflict damage on people, to try to win people to his cause, is very, very limited. Now, excuse me, we do not know exactly how long Satan has. But John here in Revelation chapter 12 says he has how long? A short time, a brief period. Well, that consists of at least 2,000 plus years because of when Jesus died. Now, John could be using this literally. I think probably the better explanation is that it is a figurative explanation or a figurative description of the entire Christian era. We know that when the Lord comes back, the earth is going to be destroyed. 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 10. And when that time comes, what will happen to Satan's opportunities to ensnare people? They're going to be gone. It's going to be done. So his time, however long that's going to be, is going to be very, very limited. And he's not happy, certainly about his future, because hell's going to be a very, very undesirable place. So this is going to be one of the things, as we get ready for verses 13 to 17, it motivates him to be just as hostile to people as he possibly can. One other quick point about this, even if the Lord doesn't come back for 10,000 years or 100,000 years, when you compare that period of time to eternity, would you say it's long or short?
Short.
It's short. So even from a literal perspective, John's point would be true. Anything that you want to add or ask before we pick up with verse 13 in Revelation 12? Okay. Verse 13, and when? The dragon, who's that? It's Satan. We know that because of verse 9. 9 says the great dragon was cast down. He's the old serpent that's called the devil. All right, so when the devil or the dragon saw that he was cast down to the earth, he persecuted the woman that brought forth the man-child. When Christianity came into the world, it made a huge, huge impact. And that impact was experienced across a lot of fronts. When you think about the rulers who rejected Christ, rejected the preaching of the gospel, certainly they paid a price for that. Matthew 24, the destruction of Jerusalem, there was that effect because people had rejected the gospel. We think about some of the Jewish priests, Acts chapter 6, verse 7, they were changed. They changed their religion and so forth. But now John says, amidst all the changes, was the devil also affected when the New Testament church came into being? Yeah. I mean, that's pretty substantial to say this has been a major impact, really worldwide, but even in the spiritual realm. We know from verse 4 that Satan tried to stop the system of Christianity before it was instituted. Verse 9, though, tells us that he did fail. And now, because of that, what's his only option? Tried to stop it before it came, was unable to stop it. It was instituted, so now what's his backup plan, if you will? Can't undo it, so let's go and let's try to persecute people. Let's go and try to inflict as much damage on the Lord's church as I possibly can. So that's why John says he was involved with the persecution of the woman that brought forth the child. Remember Matthew 16, 18? Jesus said, I will build my church, and the gates of Hades, that is death, is not going to prevail against it. It's not going to stop it. So maybe Satan thought that death was going to somehow hold the Lord, but Jesus said, I'm going to do this. Nothing is going to stop me. And now Satan has had to come to that time where he acknowledges this. But he is going to persecute the church throughout time. Now, when you think about Satan and his persecution, even before the church, you find out just how zealous he was. And you also have some insight, I think, as far as how crafty he was. Job 1, verses 18 and 19 tells us that Job lost his children. And when you think about that, it's almost presented as an act that is so casual as just mowing the lawn. We hear about some of the people today that take the lives, you know, various shootings, and they say he showed up and just bang, 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 took the lives of various people. And when that happens, it's not uncommon for people to label that kind of individual as a psychopath. They say, you know, no feelings, and he can't think and can't reason, just a cold-blooded, a cold-hearted killer. Well, isn't that the picture of Satan? I mean, he mows down Job's children, and there's no hint of remorse. There's no suggestion that he was using any kind of restraint or that he felt any kind, that he had any kind of bad feeling about that. And then, when you continue study from the first chapter of Job, it suggests with the attacks. Do you see, if you will, timing in those attacks on Job? Job gets a bad report. And then when's the next report come in? All right, comes in right after the next. And then when's the next report come in? I mean, you think about just hammering a nail. Bang, 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 bang. Now, that's pretty cruel. Now, when we think about waves of bad news today, somebody says, oh, I got bad news last week. For the last month, things have been bad. But just imagine, one right after another. And then when we look at Job chapter 1, we see something else. How did Job get the reports? Job 1, about verses 15 through 18. Who came to tell it? Or did he have to go out on his own and find it? Yeah. And how many, you remember that statement? I alone. Boy, isn't that bad? Just leaves one witness to come and say, this is what happened. I've got firsthand testimony, and let me, you know, it's not that half of us are gone or three-fourths of us have been killed or our lives have been taken. So when you go back and you look at the first chapter of Job, you find just how evil, how wicked, how vile, how mean this creature is. Then consider this point. If he was that mean prior to the cross of Christ, now that Christianity has been instituted, how angry do you think the devil is? He was mad before, but now. So when you think about a creature like that, and you consider that that creature is after you, he's after me, he's after the whole world, it's a frightening thought. But this is, when we look at the first chapter of Job, and what we have here in Revelation chapter 12, the insight about the devil. It's really extensive, and it is really frightening. So the trials, the tears that we have and shed in life, they certainly do not faze Satan in any way. He's not remorseful. Demon possession in the New Testament era, you see just how unkind he was to people, even to the point of possessing small children. So just a very, very horrific creature. Anything you want to add or ask before we pick up with verse 14 and following? Okay. Let's pick up, with verses 14 and 15. And they were given to the woman, and they were given to the woman the two wings of the great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness unto her place, where she is nourished for time and times and half time from the face of the serpent. And the serpent cast forth out of his mouth, and the woman water as a river, that he might cause her to be carried away by the stream. Now, if you look at verse 14, you find that it is directly related to verse 13 and also quite similar to verse 6. Satan lost a lot of his power. Because of that, he now earnestly seeks to persecute the woman that brought forth the man-child. And here, as John continues the picture, he says that Satan's efforts were so fierce that the woman, what did she need? She gets two wings of an eagle, and she's transported off into a safe place. She's able to go into the wilderness, and there she's going to be nourished. She's going to be protected for how long? A time? All right. Now, we've seen this expression before. Back in chapter 11, verses 2 and 3, this expression is equivalent also to 1,260 days as well as 42 months. Anybody remember what we said about the expression? 1,260, 42 months. Well, maybe let's break it down. Is it a good time or is it a bad time? It's all right. 50-50 chance of getting that right. It's a bad time. It's a time of describing throughout the Christian era, God's people are going to face problems from Satan. They're going to face all kinds of difficulty. Just as the nation of Israel was out there in the wilderness and they faced some issues. You may remember the chart that we passed out a couple weeks ago. There were the comparisons between Israel and the New Testament church. They were out in the wilderness. They faced hardships. And such is also going to be true for the church as it goes through the Christian era. And a lot of that is going to be based on the fact that the devil hates the church. Now, in the verses that John describes, the wings of an eagle, the people that spend more time trying to make Revelation apply to current events in our day and time rather than actually interpret the text, when they see this, what do you think they conclude as far as an interpretation? The wings of an eagle. Well, this must refer to which nation? It's got to be the United States of America because, you know, we're big on the eagle. Well, I don't think that's what John meant for a couple of reasons. When you go back to the Old Testament, you may have a cross-reference from the book of Exodus. It's Exodus chapter 19, verse 4. God's people, this image is applied to them. God's people received his help. They received his protection. When you go back and you look at their experience with the Egyptians. And when you think about the image, you know, you got this eagle that swoops in and takes folks away. Positive image or a negative image? Positive, taking you to a place where you can be protected and cared for. Well, God certainly did that with his people and for his people at various times, especially when it came time to dealing with the folks of Egypt. And now God says in the Christian era, what's he going to do for us? You're a member of his church? Devil's after you, but God says, I'm also going to help you. I'm going to offer some assistance. So have some confidence in me. Have faith that I am going to aid you. Remember what Peter said in 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 5? He says, by faith you are guarded unto a salvation. I think he says, ready to be revealed at the last time in the latter part of that verse. But one more statement about that. Then too, even in the Old Testament, we find in Revelation chapter 12 that Satan wants to damage and destroy, maybe even corrupt the church. But back there in the book of Daniel, and probably in the next week or two, we're going to go back, and you may want to read Daniel 2 and Daniel 7 in advance of future class. But Daniel, in talking about the kingdom that was going to be established, he said the kingdom was going to last for how long? Forever. God was going to set up a kingdom that would not be destroyed. So God has done that. He continues to work to and with and for his people so that they do not have, to have great concerns about the devil. But they do, as Betty mentioned, need to be cautious. Now here's a little sub-point that I think is kind of interesting. Today sometimes people say, well, but, you know, basically God does it all for us. But when you go back and you look at this image of an eagle, let's take a look at it one more time. They're in 14 and 15. And there was given to the woman the two wings of the eagle that she might what?
Fly.
That she might fly. So the wings were given, but you know, did the lady have some responsibility? Yeah. It wasn't God said, I'm just going to swoop in and grab you and take you out. But you've got some spiritual responsibility. Well, isn't that true as we think about defeating the devil? You know, we can't just sit back and say, well, okay, God, I'm just going to live as I want and everything's going to be great. God says, safety is available, but you've got to be willing to participate in the process. You've got to be willing to get on board, and you've got to be willing to stay on board. So, small point, but we do need to be willing to flee from the devil. Then verse 15, we have one of the many contrasts in this particular book. And let's read that one more time. And the serpent cast out of his mouth after the woman water as a river. Now think about that. A little bit later, over in chapter 21, or chapter 22, if you will, Revelation 22, verse 1, as well as verse 17. What's flowing from the throne of God? There is the river of life. And John says, if you are athirst, come and drink. Well, would you think that that water is pure or not pure? All right, it's going to be pure. And the other quick question, and this kind of gets us way ahead, but when do we drink of that water of life? Are we going to be up there with big cups in eternity, or do we partake of the water of life now? All right, we do that now. You know, we learn about the gospel, we're baptized, and then we continue to grow and so forth. All right, God's got that pure water. Well, if the devil, as we've described, is actively trying to persecute the church, you think the devil has water for folks as well? He does. But his water is, it's like sewer water. It's polluted. It's very, very dangerous, filled with all kinds of things that we do not want. Now, John says, this serpent, he's casting out of his mouth, he's going after the woman, after God's people, and he's doing this as a river. Now, if you think, we've seen in recent times some footage of this, and as I make this point, let's have two people head back to the Psalms. The imagery may not be quite as clear as some other things, but I think these verses will help make the point. Psalm 18, verse 4. Let's head somebody back there first. You have a minute or two to get to it. Psalm 18, verse 4. All right, Tina. And then Glenda, since you raised your hand as well, Psalm 32, verse 6. 18, 4 and 32, 6. Now, we've seen in recent times floods, and people foolishly think, well, hey, I'm in a big car, I'm in a large truck, I'm a strong person. And even though we've been warned that the floods will sweep you away, this, that, and the other thing, we're confident that we're going to, you know, be able to get through the water okay. Well, people find out what? When it comes to the big truck, the big car, or the strong body.
Go after that
They're no match for the water. I mean, it literally just sweeps them away. So here, John pictures the devil and his attack as the church as a rushing stream. All right, let's pick up with the psalm references. Tina, Psalm 18, verse 4.
The pains of death surrounded me, and the floods of ungodliness made me afraid.
Okay, now think about that. You've got the flood of the ungodly. Well, once again, water, ungodliness, unrighteousness, and it's a terrifying thing. When we think about some of the things that Satan tries to pull on the church, as far as the church in the universal sense or individual Christians, it can be a frightening thing. Then Psalm 32, verse 6. Glenda?
Therefore, let everyone who is godly offer prayer to you at a time when you may be found, surely in the rush of the great, surely in the rush of great waters they shall not reach him.
Okay. Once again, you see the imagery. There's the great water, the great rush, this great amount of evil. And in this particular case, the psalmist said, it's not going to reach you. When we think about the devil, he is a creature that would literally like to wash people, and even, we might say, whole congregations. In fact, we couldn't even say the universal church away. And what kind of things can you mention or think of that would allow Satan to do that? What allows him to function like a flood and just say, okay, I'm going to come in and I'm just going to wash this group of God's people or this single Christian away? Scott? All right, suffering. You could put health issues in there as well. Satan says, I'm going to do my best to see that this person is afflicted. And once again, we're outside the time of the miraculous in the first century. But whatever he can do in this particular area, let's see if we can destroy the person when it comes to suffering. What else? All right, you think about those kinds of things in a local congregation. People can engage in some works that would be consistent with the works of the flesh in Galatians chapter 5, and petty grievances. You would find that along with the other things that you mentioned. He thinks, hey, I'm just going to flood this group with these kinds of problems. Church splits, elders quit, preacher leaves, and half the folks end up not going anywhere or heading off to some group that's contrary to the Lord's church. So he's able to use that. What else? What about false doctrine? Think Satan can use that? He says, okay, I'll head people down this particular direction and I'll just bury them in religious error. He's done it.
Well,
Steve?
I was going to say a combination of what you said. I'm fully aware of nearby congregations where they had strong eldership. One, couple moved away and then they had false doctors come in. And the church where I'm thinking of doesn't even exist now.
Yeah, I mean, Satan literally was able to wash those kinds of congregations away through that very thing. What about immorality? You think that's been like a flood? It's destroyed people individually. It's destroyed people congregationally. And there have been some cases, nationally. You remember this situation a few years ago from the Winkler family? Preacher's wife was charged with murder. She shot her husband. Well, once again, maybe that didn't damage the church as much as some other things. It didn't shut down some congregations. But once again, Satan is very, very involved in seeing if he can literally wash God's people away from the earth. Now, we talked before about Revelation chapter 11 and mentioned some of the things that when you go back and you look at the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages, if you will, Satan was able to really do a lot of damage to people, get the Bible out of the hands of folks, and create a religious system that is absolutely contrary to God's will. So very, very effective. And today he still wants to, continue to send forth this flood of evil that's likened to this great river. And he's very, very good at what he does. Anything that you want to add or ask before we pick up with 16 and 17? Betty? It almost seems like he's on steroids right now.
Yeah.
If you saw the news this morning, and maybe it came up before this morning, but anybody hear about the university in Missouri? There is now an ongoing discussion there about taking some of the Wiccan holy days or high days and making them holidays. Now you think about where we are as a nation. We're a college campus and presumably some others will probably follow, where they say, okay, you know, we've got this particular special holiday, this holy day for witches and some other people involved with, you know, the occult and that whole line of thought, and we're going to go ahead and give them their holy day as well. You've got Christmas, and you've got Easter, and you've got, you know, all these other quote-unquote Christian holidays, so now in the name of equality. But when we look at where we are as a society, and this has some impact on evangelism, and I mean, in this area, we're probably a little more limited than some other places in the United States, but still, we are living in a very, very godless time, and it just continues to get worse. You remember that famous statement in the book of Judges, and every man did what was right in his own eyes. Now, maybe, you know, the Lord will let the earth stand and things are going to, you know, radically change one day because people will say, see that this is not the right way and they'll turn back to God. I don't know how things are going to go and how things are going to end. But right now, when you begin to look at our world, it is a crazy, crazy place. And I attribute a lot of that to people going back and basically rejecting God. There was another hand over there, I thought. Okay, in the middle?
I was just going to say, when lightning struck the basilica the other night,
yeah,
right after, or several hours after Pope Benedict, you're saying that, and I saw Satan fall like lightning.
Oh, I've not heard that part of the...
prophet's supposed to be in there now, or coming in there. And this next pope is supposed to be Peter the Roman, who's supposed to be the last pope.
Oh. So are they going to designate him as a 666 guy that we read about in Revelation 13?
He's supposed to lead his people through great tribulation.
I see.
So it's just, you can just see this getting wild.
Well, I didn't know how people were going to spin the lightning thing. I thought it could go one of two ways, which would be the direction that you mentioned, or they'd say this is a sign from God, you know, that it's right for the Pope to resign. You know, God gave us this heavenly sign. So. But, you know, people do all kinds of crazy things, and it's interesting how some of these things line up. For example, you can take a dollar bill and fold it in such a way where it looks like the Twin Towers that were destroyed on 9/11. And like I say, most of us have seen those kinds of things. So it's kind of like some of the magazines at the checkout counter, you know, Star and some of the other things, you know, prediction of this. Well, if you try hard enough, you can, you know, make a circle fit into a square. It may not fit very well, but you can kind of finagle it and, okay, look, it fits. But... Yeah, yeah, so, but not a good way to deal with spiritual things. Okay, 16 and 17, let's go ahead and start on these two verses as well. And the earth helped the woman. Now think about that. The earth helped the woman, God's people. And the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the river. Now that's that sewage, if you will, that's coming from the devil, all the bad and evil things. Swallowed up the river, which the dragon cast out of his mouth. And the dragon waxed wroth with the woman and went away to make war with the rest of her seed that keep the commandments of God and hold the testimony of Jesus. We've said, and one more time, the woman in this chapter describes religion in the first part of the chapter, the religion that led up to Christ. Second part of the chapter, which we're now in, the woman refers to the New Testament church. And here John says, the woman, God's people, the church, were helped by who? The earth, or the world, the unsaved. Well, now that seems kind of odd, doesn't it? Generally, when we think about and when we talk about the world, we typically associate it as a force that's hostile to God's people. But John says, as Satan is trying to drown God's people individually, collectively, in the world with things like sin, false doctrine, verse 15, there are times when non-Christians, they help swallow up, they absorb, they limit some of Satan's activity. Now, we're not told specifically how the world does this, but I think we can offer a couple of ways that it might occur. Anybody want to take a shot at explaining it? How does the world help swallow up some of Satan's offensive attacks on the church, God's people? Well, let me toss this out for consideration. Do you ever find the unsaved opposing anything that would be consistent with Satan's will? All right. What would be some examples?
Taking prayer out of school. They don't know.
All right. You have some people who are not really religious, but at the same time, they would say, well, we think this is a good thing. So when it comes to supporting prayer in school, we're on board with that. What else?
Abortion.
All right. That's probably going to be the best answer that I can give. Because you have a lot of people who are not necessarily religious, but they do believe that life begins with conception. So if you were to go to a right to life rally, or maybe even some books, you were to read some books, look at some websites, you would find some people who are pro-life, but they're not necessarily religious. And you can go through all the various moral issues. You could look at gambling. You could look at same-sex relationships. You could look at illegal drug use. You could even look at bad language. You know, there are some people who are not religious, but they don't approve of cursing. So the list is really quite long. So as you have these people from the world stand for, and they don't always stand for everything that's right, but as they stand for some things that are consistent with God's will, they help, if you will, sort of stem the tide a bit when it comes to Satan and his wickedness. And we should be thankful for what these people do. Because if these folks didn't exist, what would our world be like? It would be a whole lot worse. I mean, it would, you know, practically be unbearable. So as long as we've got some people in life who hold to some of the basic tenets, the basic principles of morality, Satan's work, in many respects, is going to be limited. But as we look at our culture, based on what was just said, where are we headed? At least as we kind of look at the current state and, you know, project things out 5 years, 10 years, 20, 50, 100 years out, if we're allowed to live that long. All right, there's less and less of that. So as those helpers, if you will, from the world decrease, what should we expect from Satan? All right, he has some more assets to work with. And we would assume, based on what John says, the anger and so forth, that he's going to use them. So if you have fewer and fewer people, that's bad. But when you have the devil continuing and maybe even increasing in power, because there are fewer people who hold things in check, we should expect, logically, that things are going to get much, much worse.
There's a lot of denominations that have a lot of good in mm-hmm. but they just don't get to the whole truth. So that,
right. There are one more force that is there to help keep Satan in check a little bit. Now, the devil's kind of able to use them when it comes to spreading false religion, so he does get some benefit from them, but at the same time, they do restrict some of what he's able to do. So, very, very interesting passage that, you know, John gives us some insight here. In just a second, Jeff, we'll take Dolores first. It's our hand initially.
We're talking about the unsaved and how they can stand up for something that's, you know, that even saved people, so that's horrible. I think of in prison, you even have, like,
sure.
an honor code among thieves, and you take someone who's molested a child, they got a hit on their head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you might murder, you might rob, you might say the worst possible things, but you know, being a pedophile in prison is the one thing that is generally completely unacceptable. So you're right, even in that environment, there is some opposition, typically, to at least one sin. That's true. And I've said before, and I would, based on what you said, and I appreciate those comments, we typically, as we go back and we see world history, we see cycles. You know, you have ups and you have downs. And people have been able to incorrectly use those cycles to say the world is going to end. Now, if you go back, I think, 150 years ago, and you look at the moral code that we had back then, we probably were at a high point. you had a nation which would not allow atheists to testify in a court of law. And you look at some other things that, I mean, you still had sin, obviously, but there seemed to be more of an emphasis in righteousness. Anybody received the Gospel Advocate? Okay, have you made it far enough into the current issue? Dave Miller has in there from Miller from Apologetics Press has some information in there about Congress and their going back and promoting Bibles. And even during wartime, I mean, there was a shortage of various things, but Congress said, hey, we need to get Bibles into the hands of people. Can you imagine our Congress doing that today? They would. They'd be scoffed.
They'd be voted out.
Right. So once again, and that's been, you know, within the last 100 years, so we had a high point. But now we seem to be headed down to a low point. And as you said, rather than say that this is the end, this low point may exist for a while. And that's why I said, you know, 10, 20, 50, 100 years out, if we're still here, things may turn around once again. And we may have a nation that really swings back to God. So as you look at this, we've got cycles in history that go back and forth. So when people show up, you know, the Jehovah Witnesses back in the 1900s were saying the end of time is here. You know, time is short because we've got things like the typewriter, you know, being invented. You know, and boy, I mean, you know, we've just come to the point where technology has advanced. Well, a bad prediction, obviously, you know, when you look at now what people can carry in their pockets as far as a cell phone. But, yeah, we don't want to go down that road, but at the same time, we see, we live in a time where things are not good. But back in Paul's time, when you look at Corinth, you see how bad things were there, and it really was bad, Sodom and Gomorrah and so forth. Bessie? Yes. Yeah, may not be few. May not be many. It may be few. Jesus asked one time, I think it's in Luke 17, will there be faith on earth when he returns? So it seemed like the number's going to be, you know, very limited. And at this point, I mean, we've got millions, I would say, of folks trying to do what's right. So we don't know when he's going to come back, but it does seem that there will be faithful people, though there'll be few in number when he does return. Scott? I think, and I was going to say a couple things about that. Here, earth, you have them being distinguished from the people who are also referred to as the sea. And when you look at the word earth, often that describes people who are interested in God. They're interested in spiritual things, and they may actually offer some service to him, but they're not actually part of the church that was created by Christ. And then those who are the people represented by the sea seem to be those who are essentially uninterested in God and spiritual things. So here you have that distinction. You find some other passages in Revelation where sea is used in a more general way to describe, really, the unsaved. Like I say, here I think you've got those distinctions intact. Sherman, quick point?
Yeah, I definitely agree with what Jeff is saying. What we do here in the United States, you know, we're a young country, and we remember the founding fathers and their beliefs. We see where we are today.
Yeah, and there you go back to the cycles. And we may get to a point where people, you know, some of this stuff, it just doesn't make sense. And after a certain point in time, people may just say enough. We need to go back and we need to have prayer again in schools. You know, Russia did this. When you go back and you look at communism, they tried to blanket God out of their society for a long time. And then they reached a point where they said, well, hey, you know, this hasn't worked very well. So let's allow foreign missionaries to come in. Let's go ahead and promote Bible reading. Let's go ahead and re-emphasize religion. And we could have a great spiritual renewal, once again, in America. But yes, for the foreseeable future, it doesn't look like that's what we're going to have. It looks like we are in a really, really secular environment. One of the interesting things about this that, in my mind, is, and we deal with people like this all the time, we now have people who operate on basically two different levels. On one level, they would say, it's almost like they have a split personality. On one level, they would say, you know, there is no truth. It's just your interpretation, this, that, and the other thing. But, you know, if they were to get their paycheck and they were paid 75% less than the wage they agreed to, and they go to the employer, they, you know, show up at the payroll office and say, well, hey, my check is a three-fourths less than what it should be. Well, that's just your interpretation. Can you imagine what these people would say? They'd be outraged. Because on the one hand, they do live in the real world. But when it comes to other things, especially spiritual things, they sort of blank that out and then begin to exist on a different plane. It's just what you know, what you choose to believe. But that doesn't work in the real world. So that's part of the challenge as far as trying to help people. Let's see, if the rest of her seed here in the final two verses seems to be a collective noun to describe all the members of Christ's church. John says that these people keep the commandments of God. You've got Satan's great anger against the woman, Christ's church, but once again, he does not have the power to destroy it. Remember in John 10, Jesus said they can't snatch people from where? My hand. Now they can wander away. But we are spiritually safe if we do what God has said. We mentioned before we're still subject to various temptations, but even those God put some limits on, 1 Corinthians 10:13. We need to keep the commandments of God. Jesus talked about that, John 15, verse 14, to hold to the testimony of Christ. So the devil, as we said, is after us. He wants to do as much damage as he can to the church. So when we begin Revelation 13 next week, Lord willing, the Bible is going to talk about some reinforcements. Because you know, the devil is so hostile to God's people, he's going to go out, John says, and try to get some people, enlist some people for his service. And one of the things I think that we'll see in Revelation 13 is a reference to the Roman Empire.